Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, amigos. You know what's really easy to do and even easier to forget? Please help me out and hit that like button if you're listening on YouTube. And if you're listening somewhere else, what the hell? Pop in, give me a thumb. Say hello while you're at it. It helps me a ton with the algorithm. And besides, it's real nice to see you there. And now, on to the show. Hey, welcome back, friend. Glad you made it. Being National Men's Grooming Day, I figured you'd be busy shaving your balls and stuff. Of course, all the ladies are here. Say hi, Chester. Hey, a little word of warning, though. Don't go looking for Jeff in the comments. We know what he's up to. Paul, too. Crazy kids. Well, anyway, come on in, friend. Hey, Chester, check this out. What do you think of that? Yeah, I nicked myself a couple times, but ain't so bad. Oh, I gotta go. Hey, check out simplyscarypodcast.com when you get a chance. Become a patron. For as little as $7.99 a month, you can get their entire catalog ad-free and available to download or stream. 13 years of horror for a bargain price. So tonight, we welcome author J.G. Martin by way of Velox Books. This one's a kind of Lovecraftian cosmic horror meets modern conspiracy thriller. And it comes from his book, Crooked Gospels, which we hope you'll check out. So, without further delay, from author J.G. Martin, we come in pieces. The lockdown started the day the smiley man came by. He wore a suit that seemed two sizes too big, with a tie so tight it might have been strangling him. "Greetings," he sneered as I opened the door. "I have some unfortunate news for you." I stifled a yawn, squinting in the glare of the sunrise. "Unfortunate news?"
"Indeed," he said cheerily. "I'm going to need to board up your doors and windows. With you inside, of course."
"Excuse me?" Footsteps sounded from behind me. My wife, Anne, swept onto the doorstep, her house coat streaming behind her.
"Did I hear that right? You're threatening to board us in? Is this some stupid prank?"
The man didn't move, didn't react. He continued to smile, eyes bloodshot and unblinking.
"Hello? Did you hear me?"
Anne's voice dropped to dangerous levels of impatience.
"Treff,"
she snapped.
"Call the cops. Tell them this guy's trespassing."
I brought a hand to my face, stifling another yawn, and wandered inside with a shrug. A minute later, I was back on the doorstep.
"The phone's dead," I mumbled. "Cell two. Even the Wi-Fi's out of commission."
She gaped at me.
"You're kidding."
"He isn't," said the smiling man. "We cut communication utilities while the town was asleep. Less panic, you see."
I stepped forward, adopting my best impression of masculine menace.
"Listen, buddy, I don't know who you think you are, but..."
"Agent Kane,"
he said, lips trembling under the weight of his grin. He pulled out a badge that might have been real and explained he was CIA, hunting for a terrorist cell they had tracked to our slice of suburbia.
"Not to worry," he continued. "My staff will be searching every household for these vermin, and once we locate them, you'll be free to go."
An engine backfired, interrupting me before I could get another word off.
A semi-truck lurched to a stop on the street, its brakes screeching against the tonnage of its trailer. Soldiers spilled out the back, their dark military fatigues blended with the dim morning light, rifles slung over their shoulders like quiet threats. They began distributing planks of wood from the truck alongside hammers and nails. The man's grin widened, his pale eyes shivering in his skull.
As I was saying, you'll need to step inside. For your own safety.
I tensed. We were outnumbered, outgunned. These people held all the cards and they knew it. So with no other choice, Ann and I retreated inside.
Old Ty always said this would happen.
Ann muttered bitterly, pacing madly in our living room.
Always. And I called him crazy for it.
That's because he is crazy, I told her, watching as soldiers hammered boards haphazardly across our windows. Nobody with that many guns is well adjusted, Ann. They just aren't. Ann gnawed at her fingernail, blonde hair a mess about her face.
I don't know, Trev. That Kane guy made my skin crawl. And those soldiers? I've never seen soldiers wearing black camo like that. If you ask me, they look more like the terrorists.
I heaved a sigh, pulling her close and kissing her hair.
Everything's going to be fine, baby. I promise.
That night, we woke to the glare of lights. A truck growled down our street, hulking and armored, its spotlight cutting through the cracks in our window barricade. Soldiers leapt from the vehicle, their boots hitting the pavement with ominous thuds. They marched to the house across the way and with practiced precision painted a symbol on the door, a red sphere that gleamed wetly in the dark.
That's Kent's house,
Ann murmured, watching through the boards.
So they're vandalizing private property now? Classy.
Maybe it's to mark that they've already cleared it, I reasoned. You know, from those terrorists or whatever. Ann scoffed.
Don't tell me you believe that crock, Trev.
All I'm saying is that maybe we leave the conspiracy theories for old Ty, yeah?
You actually think that...
Ann's voice trailed off, eyes widening. Outside, the soldiers began kneeling one by one before the sigil on the door. They leaned back, arms splayed out, fingers dancing across the ground. Started to sway, side to side like human pendulums.
What the ever-loving fuck?
Ann breathed. I fumbled for my glasses, swallowing hard. Okay, I'll grant you that's a little weird. The soldiers let their necks tilt backwards, faces toward the night sky. They went motionless, almost like they'd been shot dead on the spot. Then, with a sudden gasp, began to speak. Chant. It resembled a sort of throat singing, except more guttural and absent of tune.
Crack the window,
Ann hissed.
I want to hear what they're saying.
I eased the window open, letting in a rush of autumn air in that strange chorus. To me, it was gibberish. Nothing but a fever dream of consonants and vowels. But languages were Anne's life, her career. She'd grown up speaking three and now spoke half a dozen more than I spoke English. Well? She gnawed her lip, shaking her head.
I don't know, Trev. I've never heard anything like it. There aren't any familiar pronunciations, accents, or... It's all just nonsense. I can't even place the region it's out of.
Maybe it is nonsense, I suggested, grasping for some excuse to make sense of it all. What if they're trying to freak us out on purpose, like a practical joke or something? I've heard soldiers doing worse to pass the time. But Ann didn't reply. Her fingers gripped the edge of the window, her eyes buzzing with anxiety as we watched. A minute passed, two. Then, almost as soon as the chanting started, It stopped. The soldiers lurched up to their feet. Without a word, they marched back to their truck and with the roar of an engine vanished into the night. Dawn found Erin at the kitchen table, her bloodshot eyes fixed on a half-empty wine glass. She didn't look up as I shuffled in.
So,
she said, voice raw.
Any brilliant ideas?
I blinked, still half asleep. About?
Last night, the ritual on our street.
Oh, that. I poured myself a bowl of cereal and sat across from her, swishing the spoon in the milk. I'd been hoping it was just some vivid, awful nightmare.
Well?
Anne's fingers drummed on the table, impatient.
What do you think they were doing? The chanting. That symbol. I've been through every book I own. There's nothing like it. It's practically alien.
I shoveled a spoonful of cornflakes into my mouth, chewing slowly. I haven't given it much thought. She knocked back more wine.
Well, I've got theories.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I've been thinking it's a deep state program.
My stomach lurched. Can we do this after breakfast?
What?
I shifted in my seat, uneasy. It's just, all this talk about conspiracies is killing my appetite. Anne's chair scraped back.
Killing your appetite? Christ, you saw it, Trev. Same as I did. This is more important than your bowl of frosted flakes.
Look, we saw something weird, but...
Unbelievable,
she said, eyes narrowing.
You're sitting there in pajamas, half asleep, stuffing your face with cereal, like we didn't just witness some batshit insane military seance. You're trying to pretend it away.
I sighed. A seance, Anne? Really?
Yes, really. Something deeply fucked up is happening, and you hardly seem to care.
Okay. I mumbled around another mouthful.
Okay,
she echoed, voice dripping venom. She drained her glass, fixed me with one last withering look, and stalked out.
Nothing about this is okay.
Sunset bled across the cul-de-sac. It scorched the cars and the street lamps with a crimson glare, and with it came the rumble of distant thunder. A storm was coming. Anne and I sat in silence, not speaking since breakfast. Her conspiracy theory still hanging between us like a toxic cloud. I knew better than to poke that bear while she was deep in her cups, so I busied myself with a novel on the sofa. As night fell, Anne's voice broke the tense quiet.
Do you feel that?
Feel what? I mumbled, turning a page.
That's shaking.
She drained her wine, a red rivulet escaping down her chin, staining her white tee.
The whole house is trembling. Tell me you feel it, Trev.
I lowered my book, fixing her with what I hoped was a look of concern and not exasperation. The house isn't shaking, Anne.
Yes,
she hissed.
It is.
I retreated behind my pages. Maybe leave some wine for tomorrow. Your shirt will thank you. Her lips thinned to a knife's edge. The wine glass slammed onto the coffee table as she shot to her feet.
The house is shaking, Trevor. See?
It took everything I had not to roll my eyes, but I knew appeasement was my best shot at avoiding a fight, so I lowered my book. And she was right. Her glass was trembling. It was dancing like she had set it atop a washing machine. Probably... I cleared my throat. Probably just one of those semi-trucks rolling by.
For 10 straight minutes?
Anne countered. An earthquake then, I reasoned, not sure I believed my own excuse.
What kind of earthquake lasts 10 fucking minutes, Trev?
I exhaled, frustration bubbling over.
Christ, Dan. I don't know. Maybe we're feeling the aftershocks. You got a better explanation?
Sure.
Her eyes glinted.
How about Harp?
Harp?
She nodded, swaying on her feet.
It's this radar array up in Alaska. Bunch of transmitters screwing with the ionosphere. Weather control. Electromagnetic fuckery. Old Ty says they can even trigger earthquakes when they crank it up.
I ran my hands over my face, not believing I was actually having this conversation. Oliver Old Ty Tyler was our next-door neighbor, a Vietnam War vet with enough PTSD to make an asylum blush and a stockpile of guns to match. So what? I started. You think earthquakes are a government conspiracy now?
Not all of them,
she threw back.
Just this one. Think about it. When's the last time we had an earthquake in this state? In a decade, we haven't...
Her voice died mid-sentence. I looked up to see her frozen, staring out the sliver of visible street through our boarded window. The streetlights outside were going haywire, humming and flickering like possessed fireflies before guttering out completely.
Oh my God,
she breathed. It's a power outage, Jan. Not the end of the world. She shook her head fiercely, jabbing a finger at the glass.
No, no, no. Out there, at the end of the road. Do you see that?
Let me guess. Soldier spray painting another house. Anne's finger stabbed at the window, desperation etched on her face.
Just look, for fuck's sake.
All right, I groaned, dragging myself to the makeshift peephole. Let's see. Parked cars, check. Our sad apple tree, check. Lawns begging for a rake, and... My voice shriveled up in my throat. What the fuck? A monstrous shadow stretched across the cul-de-sac, cast by a figure that defied reason. It towered at the end of the lane, easily as tall as the streetlights. A yellow jacket hung from its frame like a tattered sail, topped by a hood that shrouded its face in empty darkness. My jaw went slack. My brain scrambled for explanations, anything to make sense of the impossible sight before me. It was a hallucination. Had to be. Maybe that elusive terrorist cell had spiked the water supply. And now we were all tripping balls, drowning in shared paranoia. LSD in the reservoir, maybe. Or some cutting-edge chemical weapon. Soviet leftovers. Or... The shadow moved. The world shook. Realization hit me like a sledgehammer. This thing, this nightmare made flesh, was the source of those tremors. But how? The creature was a beanpole, rail thin despite its height. How could something so spindly make cars rock on their suspensions? The damn thing was rattling the photo frames on our walls, making our porch light blink on and off. I stammered. This can't... Words failed me. The creature advanced, its gait a glitchy, unsettling waltz. Slow, then blindingly fast. Freeze frame pauses punctuated by legs snapping at unnatural angles. Its torso swayed like a puppet with tangled strings, arms swinging boneless at its sides, creaking like ancient timber. Anne and I stared in quiet horror. The thing's coat cracked like a whip in the wind, its voice reaching through the glass as it lumbered past our house. It sounded as though it were whimpering, sobbing like a scolded child. Suddenly it veered left. The beast plowed through Kent's fence in a storm of shattered wood, its ponderous footfalls fading into the night.
What the hell was that?
Anne gasped, her voice shaken.
I don't know,
I croaked. And God help me, I wasn't sure I wanted to find out. The next day, Anne retreated to the attic. I found her hunched by the grimy window, frantically scrawling theories on scraps of cardboard. Across the way, old Ty's grizzled face glowered from his own attic perch. His sign screamed alien invasion in manic capitals. Anne's cardboard proclaimed government experiments in neater strokes.
We call them tall things,
she explained as I walked in, her hair a bird's nest on her head. Them? My stomach nodded at the plural. She nodded, grabbing a fresh slice of cardboard. Are the soldiers Satanists? She scrawled.
Old Ty spotted more of them last night,
she said, her eyes fever bright.
Further out in town. Those ones didn't hit our street, though.
Huh.
Don't tell me you still think he's crazy,
she chided, pressing her latest theory to the glass. Did I? I wasn't sure. Truth be told, I didn't know what I thought about anything anymore. I felt like my entire concept of reality had been unceremoniously thrown in the trash. What's, I said, gulping down my pride. What's Ty's take on everything? She shot me a smirk. Look, I said defensively. I'm not saying I'm buying what he's selling, but... Anne chuckled.
It's fine. Ty thinks they're bad news, as if that wasn't already obvious.
Bad news? She nodded.
He's betting it's an alien invasion, some kind of cosmic hive mind here to conquer the planet. But I'm not so sure.
What's your guess?
That they're living weapons?
Her eyes flashed with morbid fascination.
Think about it, Trev. Last year, they opened that military base in the next town over, Newbrook, and it's so secret they won't even let the staff interact with the locals. I'm thinking it's because they were developing something. Something big.
Or tall, I offered. She tapped her nose, a knowing smile on her lips.
Bingo. I'm betting the tall things are some kind of prototype they've been developing. Maybe cyborgs. Artificial super soldiers that managed to escape the compound. And now they're scrambling to round them back up.
You don't think that... Old Ty beat his fists against his window, scowling. He slapped a fresh piece of cardboard to the dusty glass.
Soldiers, not Satanists,
Anne murmured, reading the sign aloud. She frowned, uncorked her Sharpie, and got back to scribbling. A moment later, her response was pressed to our own window. Why'd they mark Kent's house then? Ty scratched his chin, narrowing his eyes in consideration. He bent down, got back to writing. A moment later, he shot up, his answer making my blood go cold. Marked for the tall things, his message read. They are hungry. We are food. The night brought thunder, and with it the tall thing returned. It lurched down our lane, its movements an unsettling ballet of creaking limbs. Cars groaned as it knocked them from its path. Streetlights flickered and died, electricity going haywire in the monster's presence. Anne and I watched from the living room, faces pressed to the boards. You think Ty's right? I asked, horror turning inside of me. You think we might actually be food for those things? She shot me a look.
Now who's jumping to conclusions?
It's just... The tall thing halted outside. its teetering frame blocking out the scarce scraps of moonlight. My heart stopped. It gazed down at us, its face unknowable behind that hanging hood, and I somehow knew it could see us, feel us. Anne's hand gripped mine, squeezed. Then it turned away, its yellow raincoat sweeping in a wide arc as it crossed the street. Its narrow legs looked grotesquely thin, bandaged, bleeding. It crouched in front of Kent's house, its head cocking to the side with a violent crack of bone. A whimper. It almost seemed as if it were examining something.
The symbol,
Anne croaked.
Old Ty thinks those red symbols are how the soldiers communicate with the tall things. He thinks they marked Kent's house.
But if not for food, then... The creature lifted a long spider-like finger to the barricade in front of Kent's door. It began to pick at the boards. One by one, it plucked them away as if they were twigs from a branch. Anne's hand squeezed tighter around mine, her teeth worrying against her bottom lip. Anxiety filled her eyes. Concern.
Don't open up,
she said in a low voice.
Don't you dare show yourself, Kent.
As the tall thing ripped the last of the boards free, it touched a finger to the door, began to scratch. It whined, sharp and wrenching, like a dog begging to be let inside.
Don't.
And kept muttering.
Don't. Don't. Don't.
The door opened. Ken stood wheezing at the entrance, one hand trembling on his walker, the other on his oxygen rack. As usual, he was scowling.
Gotta be kidding me,
he shouted hoarsely, looking past the tall thing, as if he were addressing some unseen soldiers lurking nearby.
This the kind of unholy bullshit my tax dollars are going towards? Y'all ought to be ashamed.
Kent wrinkled his nose, smacking his gums and jabbing a finger at the towering monstrosity.
Now you listen up, you two big Goliath. You might be able to intimidate them dumb fuck youngsters, but I've been around long enough to know my rights. Yeah. That's it. Well, all you want. But do it somewhere else before I...
A muffled yell. A strangled gasp. I recoiled in horror as the tall thing snatched Kent from his doorstep like a child with a bug. It lifted him by his leg, dangling the old man high above his lawn. In a snapping movement, the tall thing tilted its head to the opposite shoulder.
Oh, fuck.
Anne said, her voice hardly a whisper. Kent was red in the face, his frail hands swinging uselessly as he tried to catch the tall thing with a hook.
Get over here,
he snarled.
Get over here and let me teach you why they call me Iron Kent.
A dull crunch, an anguished scream. The tall thing had crushed Kent's leg in its grip, and the old man was now howling, hurling curse after curse at the abomination.
Where the fuck are the soldiers?
I demanded. As if in response, sirens split the night. A military convoy swerved onto the cul-de-sac, their spotlights guttering as they neared the tall thing, megaphones crackling to life before sputtering out. Soldiers poured out of the trucks. They started to shout, holler. In the chaos of it all, I assumed they were shouting at the tall thing, demanding it to put Kent down, to surrender, but it became apparent they didn't give a damn about the monster or Kent. They were addressing us, Anne and myself, They were addressing the neighborhood at large, who were probably watching this unfold with the same abject terror.
"Do not look,"
they told us.
"Do not look. Do not look. Do not look."
But by then it was too late. The creature started to cry, its loud weeping smothering the obscenities hurled from Kent's lips. It lifted a rake-like hand, gripped its hood, and pulled it back. I can only imagine what Kent saw then. The old man went rigid as stone, his defiance evaporating like tears in the sun. His body went limp, arms dangling freely beneath his head, eyes taking on a glassy, almost hypnotized sheen, and shrieked, hand flying to her mouth. Kent's face began to bubble, blister. Steam hissed from his every pore as if he were boiling from the inside out. His skin began to stretch, slough. It fell from his face in sheets, revealing the ashen white of his skull beneath. Anne staggered away, dry heaving as she scrambled for the bathroom down the hall. But I couldn't stop watching. It was like I was rooted to the spot, paralyzed in fear. My hand shook uncontrollably at my side, left eye twitching as Kent's skin and bones, his everything, poured out of his turtleneck sweater, splashing to the lawn like globs of human stew. "No," I kept thinking. "No, no, 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 no. This couldn't be happening. Whatever we had seen up until now, fine. But this, it was worse than a living nightmare. It was a living hell. A guttural drone wormed inside of my ears, and my eyes swiveled toward the soldiers, who were surrounding the monster. Except they didn't have their weapons drawn. They weren't firing on the creature. They were worshiping it. They sat back on their knees, swaying blissfully, voices chanting in that brutal language. Only this time they sprinkled some English into the mix. "Rejoice," they intoned. "Our saviors have come." Soon after, the tall things outgrew the night. They stalked beneath the glare of the sun.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Flanked by individuals in gowns of flowing white.
"Lab coats,"
Anne said.
"They're researchers, probably. Scientists studying the tall things to figure out what makes them tick. See? They've all got clipboards."
But I disagreed. To me, they seemed closer to robes, like something a priest or a nun might wear. They skulked about with bowed heads, never looked up. Across their eyes, they wore tinted visors, faces draped in hoods like the monsters they followed. After Kent died, most of the cul-de-sac decided to make a break for it. Maybe they realized the situation was spiraling out of control, that it was only a matter of time before they became the next puddle on the pavement. Maybe they just couldn't stand the screams, the thunderous thump, thump of the footsteps in the dark. I don't know. Whatever it was, they broke out of their homes, usually at night. Anne and I would wake up to the crack of gunfire, and in the morning we'd find our neighbors shot dead in their yards. Nobody came for their bodies. They were left to rot, slowly decaying as a putrid example of what awaited disobedience. old Ty became our last hope. We'd kept in contact with him through the attic window, swapping theories on those pieces of cardboard. He told us not to lose hope. He was putting together a plan, a last-ditch resistance to get us out of this mess. Might be able to use the gas line, he wrote. Draw 'em in, blow 'em up, be ready. And we were. We were ready and waiting. But eventually old Ty just stopped showing up. He vanished. Ann thought he might have decided a group escape was too risky, that maybe he snuck out on his own to raise the alarm.
He'll be back with the cavalry, Trev. Trust me. Old Ty wouldn't abandon us.
But even as she spoke the words, I could tell she didn't believe them. Her voice was empty, hopeless. She had even lost the blue in her eyes. They'd turned a dull, vacant gray. Stress had caused her to lose patches of her golden hair, while paranoia kept her from sleep. My wife was unraveling, and so was I. I'd rarely known death in my life, and now the sheer volume of it was numbing me. Kent, old Ty, I couldn't process it. I didn't know how to feel this broken, this utterly crippled with despair. We were trapped, Ann and I. Nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. We were prisoners slated for execution, just waiting until our names got pulled out of a hat. And then, almost out of the blue, the military had a change of heart. They started freeing people. I watched it happen. A soldier ripped the boards from a house at the end of our lane, four white coats monitoring his work with clipboards in hand. When he was finished, the door opened. A woman peeked out, trembling with anxious confusion. I think she might have said something to the soldier, but her voice was too small and too far for me to hear. Rejoice, he told her loudly. You are saved. Rejoice, the white coats echoed in eerie unison. The woman gave them a wary look, but then broke into tears of relief. She rushed inside, returned with a baby swaddled in her arm and her young daughter close behind. The three of them darted across their lawn, jumped over their father's corpse, and piled into their minivan on the street. The entire time, the white coats stood only meters away, quietly observing. It didn't take long for the rumbling to begin. That telltale sound of approaching death, of one of the tall things coming to claim its prize. The van started up, backfiring a plume of exhaust into the air. The woman shrieked for joy, but I knew her relief would be short-lived. See, from my vantage point at the end of the lane, I saw something that she never could. The boot locked around her tire. The van rode forward as she pressed the gas and then clunked to a stop. My heart broke. The look on her face, that desperation wasn't for her own life but the lives of her children in the back seat. The rumble reached a crescendo, and in the blink of an eye, a tall thing crashed into the van, knocking it over like a die-cast toy. I couldn't make out much beyond that. Nothing but the sound of the monster tearing into the roof of the van and pulling the crying children out one by one. My legs gave out. I slid to the carpet, hands clamped tight over my ears, and screamed so I wouldn't have to listen to what came next. Please, I sobbed. No more! After that, the lockdown was ostensibly over. Like hungry wolves, soldiers tore down boarded up doors and kicked in living room windows, dragging families out into their lawns as offerings to the tall things. The screams were everywhere, omnipresent and haunting. Ann and I cranked our sound system, but it only served as background static to the symphony of suffering. In the nights that followed, we barely slept. Ann tossed and turned beside me while I stared blankly at the ceiling fan above. There was an understanding between us. We had been abandoned. Nobody was coming to help us. Nobody was coming to destroy those monsters and save the day. We were alone, forgotten, and somehow things got worse. The darkest moment of my life occurred the morning of October 27th. I woke to sunlight peeking through our boarded-up window. Ann wasn't beside me. I looked all over the house for her before I found her note on the kitchen counter, scribbled quickly, stained with tears.
Trevor, I wish I could have said a proper goodbye, but I know you'd try to stop me. I'm going to find help. Newbrook isn't far, and their sheriff can contact the National Guard. Until then, please stay safe. We'll be together again soon. Love always. Annabelle.
She left through the basement hatch. I know this because I spotted her corpse lying outside the kitchen window. Anne gazed back at me, a look of shock painted across her pale face. A small red dot where the bullet pierced her skull. I couldn't even muster the courage to step out and bury her. Instead, the stray dogs took her apart piece by piece. Before long, all that remained of my wife was a scatter of bones, picked and chewed. When they finally came for me, I wasn't there. The men inside of me had left. All that remained was a barren husk. They kicked down my door at midnight, found me sitting at my kitchen table, drunk with a glass of whiskey in my grip. Rough hands ripped me from my chair, tossed me onto my lawn. "Rejoice," grunted the soldier. "Rejoice," echoed an approaching white coat. "You are saved, brother." Saved? I'd beheld monsters with footsteps like thunder, watched them turn my neighbors into puddles, and seen my wife rot away in front of my eyes. And I was saved? I laughed. It was so absurd, so cosmically awful, that laughter seemed the only sane response. The soldier shifted, flicking off his rifle safety.
"This one's lost it. Shall I give him the bullet, sister?"
"No,"
the white coat soothed.
"He has shown courage where his fellows have fled. Our grace will pass judgment. As it is written, so it shall be."
"As it is written,"
the soldier intoned,
"so it shall be."
The white coat studied me behind her dark visor. With a smile, she cupped a frigid palm to my cheek.
"You mustn't be afraid,"
she whispered.
"When this is over, you shall know a peace beyond all concepts, an absence of suffering so complete that your emotions will reveal themselves as the messy, corruptible things they are. Rejoice."
"Rejoice,"
the soldier droned. The grass began to pulse beneath my knees, bucking and trembling. Thunder rolled in the distance.
"It nears,"
the soldier announced. The white coat rose, joining him near my fence.
prepare the contingency.
The soldier racked his rifle, brought it up on aim with the barrel pointing between my eyes.
How many more after this?
He asked.
16.
Then us, sister?
Yes, then us.
Rejoice.
Rejoice.
The rumbling deepened. Street lights flickered around the cul-de-sac. Cars danced upon whining suspensions, moving like a mechanical ballet while birds exploded from treetops. My heart slammed. It beat a rhythm of panic against my ribs, matching the frantic pace of the stampeding footfalls. It was coming.
Why do this?
I growled.
Why not just put a bullet in my head?
Because we love you, brother,
said the white coat.
You waited patiently, persevered. For your faith, you have earned the gift of salvation, the gift of reunion. Can't you feel it? This is the rapture.
A shadow stretched across us, stealing the breath from my lungs. A monster in a yellow raincoat stood teetering at the end of the street. Only this tall thing wasn't like the others. It seemed larger, more imposing. Its scarecrow frame eclipsed even the moon in the sky as it sauntered toward us. The soldier fell to his knees, swaying in the way the others did.
What are they?
I hissed at the white coat.
Aliens?
Angels,
she said with a soft reverence.
Those that gifted us life in eons past.
The monster thundered forward, its feet leaving cracks in the pavement as it twisted and jerked, knocking aside cars and trees with its erratic movements. It whimpered weakly.
Those sounds they make. It almost sounds like they're crying.
I believe they are,
the white coat answered mournfully.
They take in all our pain, all of our sorrow, so that we may know brief glimpses of peace. They sacrifice much for us.
The tall thing stumbled onto my lawn, reaching toward me with a long arm covered in bandages and scars.
Ours,
it rasped. Matchstick fingers gripped my hair, yanking me off the ground. I cried out, kicked, shouted as I hung in the monster's grasp, dangling above my yard like a plaything.
Fear,
it murmured.
Anger. Sorrow.
It was as if it were listing off my emotions, as if it were reading me. Its face hidden beyond a shroud of darkness.
Panic. Shame. Loneliness.
The tall thing pulled in a scraping breath.
Witness our grace.
The monster lifted a hand to its hood, pulling it down. My heart stopped. A patchwork of horror gazed back at me. 100 visages stitched together in a tapestry of shifting eyes and gnashing teeth. It smiled with 15 mouths. And when it spoke, its voice was a chimera of mangled vocal cords. With each slow syllable, the tall thing's many faces bled. They came apart, cutting themselves out of the monster until its head was nothing but pieces of disparate flesh floating above a brittle neck. Eyes, ears, they spun for hardly a second before snapping back together, forming a new face, a fresh abomination.
We come.
It moaned.
In pieces.
I tried to speak. Tried to beg for my life. But my mouth wouldn't work. It was paralyzed. 100 mismatched eyes blinked at me. Warm piss dribbled down my legs. This was it. It was going to turn me into one of those puddles on the pavement. Into nothing but a slosh of skin while it devoured the deeper parts of me. The tall thing lifted a crooked finger, tapping it against my chin.
Open up.
No. I clenched my jaw, shaking my head in some pathetic final act of defiance. There was no way, no way I was going to open up for this thing. Not after what I'd seen. Not after I'd seen what. A scream tore from my throat. I howled, writhed. My lower jaw hung limply from my face, shattered and broken. My vision became a blur of tears. The monster cooed. It slipped a finger down my throat, scraping inside of me with a serrated nail. I gagged, choked. The monster's face began to come undone, slicing itself apart and hovering above its matchstick neck as floating pieces of mangled flesh. Then those pieces began to spin, expand. They swirled around us in the night, eyes blinking and mouths speaking as the tall thing probed deeper and deeper within.
You are delicious.
My veins caught fire. My blood began to boil. My arms and legs twitching in agony while the tall thing scratched at my insides as its dozen mouths began to laugh and cry in some twisted symphony of gleeful despair and gunfire. The crack of bullets shattered the night. The tall thing whirled, dropping me to the lawn as its faces snapped back together. It screeched, roared. The soldier stopped his chant. He scrambled to his feet, activating his radio with a static crackle.
Eden, this is Horseman 9. We're under attack and he...
His skull blew apart, splattering me with pieces of that thing he called a brain. I sat, gaping on my lawn as I tried to catch up to the situation. Another shot rang out, then another. The tall thing bellowed, its head snapping this way and that, trying to locate the source of the shooter as bullets tore through its raincoat, staggering it with every impact. The white coat's radio crackled. A slow, garbled voice spilled out of it, drowning its interference.
Horseman 9, please confirm previous...
The white coat scrambled behind my house, pressing her back to the wall.
Yes, Eden.
She wept, tears streaking her cheeks.
This is Saint Gonzales. We are under attack. Templar Campbell is down. I say again that Templar Campbell is down.
A pause.
Affirmative. Status of the angel.
It's taken.
Her voice cut away into a sob.
It's taken heavy fire, Eden. Our Grace's mental state appears to be deteriorating, and...
The white coat shrieked as a bullet carved through the edge of my house in a splinter of wood. She dropped to a knee, clutched her shoulder. Her pale robes blossomed a deep red, blood seeping through the fabric as she forced herself back to her feet. In time for the second bullet to pierce her throat.
She dropped to the grass, her visor tumbling from her face. Two wide eyes gazed at me, hollow and lifeless, strangled by veins of purple. A moment later, and a rocket whistled through the air above. It slammed into the tall thing, exploding in a red-orange firestorm that split my eardrums. The creature roared. It lurched backwards, its face splitting apart and reforming in mountain displays of fury. And in the glow of the fire, I saw my savior, Old Ty. He stood on his roof, surrounded by an arsenal fit for a warlord. A rocket launcher rested on his shoulder, and his mane of hair blew wildly as he let loose another RPG. The explosion sent the monster reeling. It fell backward, crashing against Kent's house in a hurricane of rubble. Ty lowered his launcher, shouting down at me.
Christ almighty! The hell you waiting for, idiot? Get out of here!
The tall thing shrieked. It snapped upright with a sound of crunching cartilage, beginning to sway back and forth, vibrating faster and faster, until... Oh my God! I started running, my heart in a race against my legs. Another RPG tore through the air. Another explosion. It wouldn't matter, I knew. Not now. Glancing over my shoulder, I looked in horror at what the tall thing had become. Six arms had burst from the back of its raincoat, a tangle of flesh woven between them, the wings of a bat. It flapped, rising into the air.
Congrats on making yourself a bigger target, dipshit!
Another barrage of rockets burst from Old Ty's roof. They connected with the tall thing in a series of explosions bright enough it almost turned night to day. Somewhere in the distance, sirens screamed. Rubber howled. The cultists would be closing in, the soldiers and the white coats. And alongside them, the low thunder of stampeding tall things. I scrambled away, tears in my eyes. Old Ty. I'd called him a lunatic, a nut job, but here he was sacrificing everything for me. As I scrambled across town, ducking between bushes and moving between sheds, I heard more explosions ringing out. I'm not sure what Ty had set up, but he was holding them for longer than I ever imagined he could have. Then, a few minutes later, as I crested a hill, I looked back. The entire town was dark, in ruins. The one source of light was Old Ty's house, but I could see a small army closing in on them. A dozen tall things, maybe more. Countless soldiers. All of them rushing forward, and... I blinked, blinded. A flash erupted. And a moment later, I was knocked on my ass by a shockwave. Half of our cul-de-sac had gone up in flames, a massive cloud of acrid black billowing into the night sky. In the distance, I heard the anguished wails of the tall things, the screams of soldiers in white coats. Good fucking riddance.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
3 hours later, I'd stumbled through Debbie Forest and into the town of Newbrook. Tears of relief welled in my eyes. The streets were quiet and still. No soldiers. No white coats. No tall things.
or the nonstop screams of their victims. Just empty silence. The stuff early mornings were made for. Squinting against the dawn, I made my way down the main road. It was odd. After so long living in a nightmare, the calm in Newbrook felt almost unnerving, uncomfortable. It seemed impossible to me that people could just be peacefully sleeping and not dead. When I reached the sheriff's office, I beat my fist against the door. I needed to blow the whistle on what was going on, explain that a paramilitary cult had taken over my town, that the tall things were melting people on the street, and that we needed to get our ass in gear and call in the National Guard. No, scratch that. We needed to call in fucking NATO. Come on, open up, damn it. But as I peered impatiently through the glass door, a reflection caught my eye. I wheeled around. And there it was. Just at the edge of the curb, gleaming with the red-orange glow of sunrise. A puddle. Strange thing was, it hadn't rained in weeks. And that was We Come in Pieces by J.G. Martin. A good reminder that sometimes the people you call crazy might be the ones actually paying attention. A little about the author. J.G. Martin writes about monsters and the things they get up to when we aren't looking. He currently resides in British Columbia with his cat Opie and dreams of someday owning a secret lair behind a bookshelf. This one's from his book Crooked Gospels, which you can find at VeloxBooks.com and on Audible.com. Thanks, J.G. Hey, here's a riddle for you. What lurks in the darkness when life is good, but always comes back when things get bad? No, Chester, not herpes. It's helpchillin.org. You know, my favorite thing about ad-supported entertainment is it's free for everyone to enjoy. My least favorite thing about it is sometimes you're fucked. And Chillin' Entertainment is a little fucked this month, and they hope you can help. If you're able to donate, please visit helpchillin.org, which will take you straight to their GoFundMe. Or if you'd prefer ongoing support, you can visit their website at chillintalesfordarknights.com and sign up to become their patron. Patrons get ad-free access to all the podcast episodes, and your support helps ensure that we lowly podcast hosts keep creating content. But most importantly, your support will help keep Drew Blood's paycheck coming in so I don't have to eat Chester. I'll do it if I have to, boy. And when I'm done with you, I'm going after Craig. Actually, maybe I'll start with Craig. Yeah, by God, that's what I'll do. So help save Craig, because I'm already getting a little hungry here. That's helpchillin.org, or become a patron to help keep the darkness alive. Your kind support means everything to us. Well, I guess this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend, and get walking. Careful not to step in any puddles. May the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. I'll see you all next week, God willing. And of course, go fuck yourselves. Good night, y'all.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.